In the year 1831, biologist Charles Darwin began a fateful journey on the HMS Beagle. On that journey, Darwin formulated the controversial theory of evolution, which has impacted society down to this day.
Our goal is to punch holes in that theory, so we'd like to welcome you to
Sink the Beagle.
Fire one, Captain.
Nice shot, John. Way to go.
Yes, Dan, I'm glad to have the controls back and put one not only in the belly of the Beagle, the propeller of the Beagle. We're going to put this boat down, stop it dead in the tracks. I'm John Kurlinski.
I am Stan Hudson. We want to welcome you to another episode of
Sink the Beagle, where we take a lighthearted look. We want to put Darwin's theories in the depths of the sea.
Ooh, well, once again, we are trying to do that very thing on this 200th anniversary of Charles Darwin's birth. And we are in studio today on that very auspicious occasion, and the world is celebrating, I suppose. Many are, but some of us are taking a slightly different track as we look back on 200 years of Darwin.
And we want to also just thank our host studio here, the Christian Record Services in Lincoln, Nebraska, who do ministry for the seeing impaired and the blind.
Yes.
It is a wonderful ministry. If you know people with those needs, contact Christian Record Services. And our engineer, Tommy, and just wonderful. Thank you
very
much.
Smiling. We've mentioned her. So
we've been in a series, Stan. We've been looking at Darwin specifically because of his birthday. We've been looking at his life, and we've been focusing on life events of Darwin that probably influenced him majorly. And one big, big one that we've been really focusing on is Darwin's tragedy of his family and his father's rejection, not rejection, but just standoffishness, his
loss of
unsympathetic.
Loss of his mother, loss of his daughter, some difficulties like that in his lifetime that contributed to the anxiety level.
Anxiety levels. And he was a man full of illness and fear and panic. And we thought that if he just would have known his heavenly father, how he could have found rest for his soul, how he could have found value and significance.
This is sort of in a series of what ifs in a way, because Darwin, we feel, may have contributed much more even than he did should he have had, a little bit better realization of who God is.
He might have been a Wesley more than he would have been a Darwin.
Yes. Well, he's a gifted man, certainly gifted.
Yes, and we've been looking at some of Darwin's habits and corresponding habits of his heavenly father. We noticed that God was a bird watcher. Charles was a bird watcher. That Charles was a keen observer of nature and anatomy, and so was God, because we said your very hairs of your head are numbered.
That's right.
But today we want to look at one more aspect of Darwin's life. It wasn't really a habit of God, but it was just the reality. I mean, a habit of Darwin. It was the reality of Darwin's life. Darwin did tears. Darwin did pain. He knew what it was like to live in a world that had a lot of what seemed like injustice and suffering and pain, physical, emotional, relational. I suspect that Darwin at a very early age probably had what we call lots of tears.
Well, you know, no matter whether you're pro-con or neutral on Darwin and you study his life, there's no question that many of the people that knew him in his day would say that he was a sensitive person, a gentle and sensitive person, and probably unlike his father in many ways, more like his mother, and that gentler side, and which made it difficult for him sometimes with his stern father. Mm.
And so really the question that I thought, if Darwin would only have seen and had a father who would be sympathetic to pain, you know, Darwin did tears, Darwin did pain, does God the Father do tears and do pain? And obviously it is so. We will find that truth. Matter of fact, it's nothing new. And we have some texts in the Bible we're going to go to real quickly, and we'll develop it real quickly. David, the psalmist, writes.
The sweet singer.
And he's having a real rough time. We don't know the exact the situation which brought it on, but David's out in the wilderness. He's alone. He's sorrowing. he's guilty over his own sin. He's suffering, and he's under so much stress and iniquity, and he realizes his life is short, and he finally cries out in verse 12 of Psalm 39, "Hear my prayer, O Lord. Give ear to my cry. Don't be silent at my tears."
You know, it's kind of funny. When we read some of the Psalms, John, we see somebody who is a very deeply emotional person and very sensitive and expressive of emotions. And I tell people, if you feel like you also are kind of a sensitive or you feel deeply things, my goodness, read the Psalms, because David has expressed in every known emotion under the sun, including great loss and great pain. Is some of the most beautiful expressions of that is found in the Psalms.
Yeah, and if Darwin would have immersed himself and might have been very good for him. It's mm-hmm. interesting, though, that tears, mm-hmm. David's saying, don't you see my tears?
Yes.
You know, tears are very precious things. They mm-hmm. mark our highest highs in life and our lowest lows.
Mm-hmm.
When they're marking our highest highs,
that's interesting.
We call that joy.
Uh-huh.
You know, because you've heard of tears of joy.
Yeah, you cry. Yeah, you laugh so much you start crying. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, or you have such a joyous experience. You know, I always think of the picture of Life magazine where the Marine was returning from battle. I think it was over World War II, and the daughter's running to meet him on the tarmac,
oh,
and
yes.
just tears streaming down her face. Tears of joy. She's mm-hmm. home with the one she loves, and mm. you know, all the sorrows, all the pain is washed away in those tears. And you think about those kind of images, and David is saying, God, don't you see I'm suffering? And mm-hmm. do you hear tears?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the tears of joy are when there's two parts working on your face.
Okay.
You have your lacrimal glands, which are those tear ducts, basically.
And
they cleanse your eyes and help mm-hmm. take out the toxins and poisons. Mm-hmm. And you have your zygomaticus muscles. Those are those muscles, those 17 muscles that cause you to smile.
Okay.
And when your lacrimal glands and zygomaticus are working in sync, we call them tears of joy.
Okay.
Unfortunately, in our world, most people have the lacrimals going solo.
Oh, I see.
Most cases in the world, it's just the tears, no smile. It's the, you know, this is where David is here in this psalm. God, don't you see my tears?
It makes me think that God originally intended for there to be tears, but only tears of joy.
Yeah. which I kind of think that, you know, for David, I look at tears and I say, David is saying, tears are kind of liquid prayers.
Ooh.
Liquid prayers. They're mm-hmm. things that I can't even speak. Sometimes you just see people and they can't even speak. All they can do is see tears running down their face.
Yeah.
And David wondered, God, don't you see my tears? Mm-hmm. Now, that's interesting. There's another psalm just a few pages later in Psalm 56, apparently over some time. Does God see tears? Well, notice what David says here. David acknowledges, you, God, have taken account of my wanderings, and you put my tears in your bottle.
Oh, a bottle of tears.
So God has another weird habit. Not only does he watch little birds, little brown birds, not only does he count hairs on our head or keep numbers mm-hmm. of in all mm-hmm. of our ways,
mm-hmm.
he collects a very precious scene. He it's like, God, there's not a tear that we have dropped that God has not put in a bottle.
What does that mean? What do you think that means?
I think that God notices again, like mm-hmm. the hairs, but he is especially recording something because
the question here will not be forgotten.
It won't be forgotten. And the question is, and I like to think of it, well, I muse on it this way on this text, you know, does God have just one huge bottle in heaven?
I suppose so.
You know, or does he customize it? And, you know, some people have got, you know, the pint sized bottle. Their life's pretty easy going, not many hardships.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have people that must have, like, you know, gallon jugs, and you have people who have 5 gallon water cooler bottles.
There's no question that loss is not spread evenly.
No,
is it?
No. And there's mm-hmm. people that have water towers in heaven.
Uh-huh.
Nobody knows the trouble they've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you're someone out there who has only known pain. Darwin, I think, had a bigger bottle than most.
Yeah,
you know,
I think so.
And we look at Darwin's life, he did pain. His mother, we've said it before, died when he was 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
His father was unsympathetic.
Mm-hmm.
His most precious daughter died at the age of 10.
Mm-hmm.
And there's probably, they say, no worse loss for in life, nothing more painful than the loss of a child.
Mm-hmm.
And
He cried a pretty good sized bottle full, you would think.
Yeah, you would think so. And David said, you put my tears in your bottle. Are they not in your book?
Mm.
And so
they're recorded.
They're recorded. What, mm. yeah. And I think the reason, you know, so God does tears. Our God does tears. Our God's sympathetic. And I guess, you know, the reason I think why God records tears, he's saying, there's nothing in your life that I'm not going to go out and redeem.
Mm.
Every low, I'm going to redeem.
Hmm.
Every low valley that we've ever were in, where sometimes all we could do was cry. You know, we can all think of a life in a time where we cried. I think of my dad's death. You know, I put up a stiff upper lip. I'm in the room where he had just died. The doctor thumps his chest. You know, we did all that we could. And again, I'm 16 years old going, oh, get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I go in with my family. There's my dad's body lying on the hospital bed. And we're all kind of around. And my sisters are crying. But big boys don't cry.
Hmm.
Not on the outside in public. And so we have inside tears. Big boys don't cry. But then after about 10 minutes in the room, I wasn't going to stay in line. I went up to the car, and as soon as I hit the car and I was by myself in our station wagon, an old white Plymouth, I remember the door slamming and just sobbing.
Mm. You know, it's funny, John, that you say the image affected the what you dealt with it. You know, the male thing, the John Wayne tough guy kind of thing. You know, it used to be in ancient days in Greeks and Romans and even in Europe, warriors, great warriors, the weeping was considered part of being male. You know,
yeah.
The weeping was okay. It's funny how culturally we're affected.
Yeah.
But no matter what, we all express, we all feel pain in the same way.
Yeah, we don't want to give up our man cards.
Yeah. You know, anything but that. Huh?
Yeah. But so we all experience those kinds of pains.
Mm-hmm.
And the irony is that the sad thing is that we don't know that. Where were you, God? We often ask that question. Where were you, God, when I was suffering?
If you were here, my brother wouldn't have died.
If you were here, God's there, mm-hmm. and he's collecting every tear. Mm-hmm. You've never gone through a dark moment alone. You might think, you know,
yes.
David records in Psalm 23, though
yes.
I walk through the valley of the shadow of death,
yes.
God was there all the time with
absolutely.
Me.
Absolutely. And if he shed tears, they would have been collected.
They would have been collected.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and does Jesus do tears? You know, you mm-hmm. see the picture of the New Testament.
Yep.
There he is.
Yes. The longest verse in the Bible, right? Jesus wept.
Jesus does.
It's the longest. I mean, it's the deepest verse.
The deepest verse in the Bible. The shortest, but the deepest.
Yes, absolutely.
That's kind of funny.
Yes. So this image of God, this is what Darwin needed.
He needed that image.
He needed this.
How it would have redeemed his life and his mm-hmm. picture of life and maybe redirected the focus of his life.
And not a dog-eat-dog world or just this rough survival of the fittest kind of negative, hopeless sort of image. I think it would have been greatly changed.
Yeah.
He would have been changed with it.
He'd have been a changed man. He would have understood the deep sympathy of God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it says, you know, it talks about Jesus being acquainted with grief. He bore our grief and our sorrow. He was acquainted with sorrow. I think it's like one of the most understatements of the scriptures. He was a man acquainted mm-hmm. with sorrow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, acquainted, hello.
Yeah.
He embraces
yes.
I get the picture here. He embraces the entire sorrow, not just the sin
sorrow,
of the world,
yeah.
the sorrow of the world, because he is going to redeem it.
Mm.
On the cross, he embraces not only our sin, but our brokenness, our fallenness, and our sorrow, and he plans to redeem everything.
You know that verse, I think it's John 11:35, Jesus wept, and that's in the story of Lazarus, and he was about ready to raise Lazarus from life, but still, when he saw Mary and Martha weeping, but he also saw others that were there weeping as well, and their weeping, their tears, John, were part of official, you know, they were paid for mourners, part of the Jewish rituals of
yeah.
helping cry. And so they were false tears, and the falseness of that pained Jesus too, because he could see people in that group that were ready to kill him and plan his own death. And the only life of the world, the only hope they ever had, the only future. And it just broke his heart. And he cried over all of those kinds of sorrows. You're right. He gathered together the sorrow of the world and was weeping
and
deeply.
Yeah, and he sat there over Jerusalem, the city whom he loved, mm-hmm. and weeps over Jerusalem. How I wanted to bear you, you know.
And that word there for it was weeping is he's sobbing. He was literally
sobbing.
Shaking.
He was shaking and sobbing.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting, though, is the Bible tells us what the end game is, so to speak, with
mm-hmm.
this habit of God of tears. He takes us to the book of Revelation, and he says, one day, there's a day coming,
mm-hmm.
and he says, and I think it doesn't, you know, I take it in the sense that there's no longer going to be a time when our zygomaticus and lacrimal are going to function independently,
uh-huh.
in the sense of, like that.
And Revelation 21:4, and God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There should be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying. There should be no more pain, for the former things have passed away.
And if Darwin would have known that,
you
can know that too.
Life. Yes.
So tune in again to another
Sink the Beagle.
Thanks for listening to Sink the Beagle. We'd like to send you a special gift just for being with us today. Write to our email address, beagle@lifetalk.net, and ask for your free copy of Dr. Dwight Nelson's book called Built to Last, A Thoughtful Look at Creation and Evolution. Ask for Built to Last when you write to beagle@lifetalk.net. And be sure to listen in next time to another episode of Sink the Beagle.
So join us here each week, my friend. You're sure to get a smile from seven stranded castaways here on Gilligan's Isle.